Chris Botti is a superstar trumpet player, if there ever was one. He has maintained a successful career in contemporary jazz and pop for over 20 years, and he will be performing tomorrow night at UPAC in Kingston for the first time. He's the complete package, a dazzling Grammy-winning trumpeter at home in everything from jazz to pop to rock, a brilliant band leader who lets his killer band shine, and a born showman whose joy at being on stage is infectious. He's amassed a spectacular variety of honors, including multiple gold and platinum albums, to become the nation's largest-selling instrumental artist. He's recorded with legends such as Aretha Franklin, Bob Dylan, and Paul Simon. In 2013, he won a Grammy for his album Impressions. Again, he will be at UPAC tomorrow night. He joins us this morning, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Chris Botti to the Roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for that very nice introduction. So nice of you. Lovely to be here.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you being here. You know, the thing that always fascinates me when I talk to you is just how much you're on the road. And I can only assume for that you enjoy it.
Yeah, well, if you were 9 years old and you picked up an instrument and you wrote down on a piece of paper, in my wildest dreams, whatever, that happened for me. And those, you know, for an instrumentalist, you can become a pop star overnight, but for an instrumentalist, it's a completely different trajectory of a career. So you better, you know, the sacrifice it takes, and I mean, I don't even look at it like a sacrifice. I feel incredibly fortunate to be able to tour the world and play with my band. And so I'm on the road, 265 days a year for the last 17, 20 years, something like that. Yeah, so, but it's awesome, and I love it, and the band's out there. We're all having a good time and feel very fortunate.
So in your mind, as an artist, how do you change it up? How do you make it interesting for you to say, okay, I want to go out another 265 nights next year?
Well, the band sort of, my role is two things. You know, it's one, to play the trumpet, obviously, and the other is to be a band leader, which means, you know, we're sort of, it's a Rubik's Cube of an all-star band. I mean, everyone in the band, you know, they're brilliant at their instrument on a really, really, really high level. And they're also busy too, so they have their own careers. They go out and do and accolades and awards and stuff. And so, you know, my thing is to keep that band sort of ever evolving and rotating out of it like an all-star band. And so it's when you play with that kind of level of talent, and it's kind of all swimming in and out of different people, then it enables you to create in a weird kind of way. It's unlike pop music. Like when pop musicians play the same song, they usually play the same parts. We can play the same song every night, and it sounds completely different in a weird kind of way. And so that I think it keeps it real fresh and interactive for us, because we're not just going through the motions, so to speak, to deliver the song. We're really kind of interacting with one another. And so when the musicians keep changing and we keep doing what we love, it shows, I think.
You are so popular, you are able to fill houses across the country and across the globe. And I ask the question, when people come to see you, what do they expect to hear, in the sense of when they leave, they would be disappointed if they didn't hear you do what? Which is another way of saying, like, what do you consider your hit to be?
Well, first of all, I'm an artist actually without really a hit necessarily song. I mean, I guess our PBS specials, when they come into play, you get a lot of drive-by traffic that people go, oh my God, I want to go see that show. But, you know, it's not like you're going to go see a Bryan Adams show and he's going to play, you know, Everything I Do For You. Like,
right.
So it's not like that type of thing. But it's been the, I guess, in a weird kind of way, the most grassroots compliment and the most difficult thing for me to explain before we get to the city. What exactly should people expect? Because when you go see U2, everyone knows they're the four guys on stage, they're going to play the hits, and they got a light show.
Right.
I got it, right? But with us, they're like, a trumpet player? Now, does he just stand there, like, by himself? Like, they don't understand it's an arc of, like, a whole bunch of stuff with three different singers and an incredible violinist and an all-star band. But what happens is over time, people either hear from their friends or they get dragged to the show, and then all of a sudden they become hooked, and we have this audience that hasn't left us yet. You know, they're not a fickle audience, and they haven't left, and it keeps growing, and that's the cool thing about it, and it's a very authentic sort of relationship I have with the audience.
And it also speaks to the breadth of the type of material that you do. I mean, there is great variety in that list.
Totally great variety. We'll we'll come out playing some blazing jazz thing, then go into a classical piece, and then an opera piece or a classical violin concerto, or then another jazz tune or an R&B thing with our singer Cy or Shayna, whoever's there, and I think it's the variety and the people I bring with us that's kept it interesting for people to come see multiple shows.
Do you have a sense of, does venue dictate ever? I mean, if you're playing Carnegie Hall, that the set list would be different if you're playing an opera house versus a jazz club?
Not necessarily. I mean, because sometimes our, it's interesting. Like, sometimes we'll be playing, really big places. I mean, we just got back from overseas and stuff like that. We're playing, like, basketball places, huge places. And sometimes you can just play the way you do in a club. I mean, it sounds different because it's bigger sounding, but the intimacy people draws them in, like in a weird kind of way. And then we kick it up when we need to, and you want to have that roller coaster of emotions. We want people to be up out of their chairs, and we also want them to maybe shed a tear if it's beautiful, And so that's really the goal.
You mentioned 9 years old. So what happened at 9 years old for you to become attached to this instrument and have the drive to make that dream a reality?
Well, I cite as the power of television. Back in the day, it was Johnny Carson, and right. And his band leader was Doc Severinsen. And so I saw Doc Severinsen on television and thought, I'd love to try the trumpet. So I started when I was 9, and I enjoyed it very much. But when I was 12, I heard the sound of Miles Davis's trumpet on an album that my band director gave me. And then from then, I just thought to myself, well, this is it for me for my life. I'm going to keep trying or die not making it, whatever. I didn't really, I didn't compute making it like being a solo artist. I just wanted to play the trumpet, and I wanted to, be in a band or play in front of people and try to make a living at it. And so, that was my goal, and I've been, steadfast about that. Through my whole life, and every parent thinks their kid's Paul McCartney, but when they really say to their parent, parents, that you want to move to New York, then the parents go, no, we were just kidding, we want you to be a doctor or a lawyer. ultimately, that I spent my 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 convincing my parents that I'm not kidding around here, that I'm really serious about this. So by the time it was time to leave to go away to school, then, they were like, okay, we got it. We're not talking you out of nothing. So I didn't really compute, the way that my career ended up, because that's like a needle in 10 haystacks. But I'm sure glad it worked out the way it did.
And I'm sure they saw the talent at that point, too. I mean, it's not just you being persistent in asking them. They also obviously saw what you were capable of.
Yeah, I mean, that said, there are a lot of incredibly talented people, but success ultimately is, a little bit of talent and a mess of drive and determination and hard work. I mean, 95% of it is drive, if you're successful or not. Because I know plenty of, super talented musicians in all different veins of music. And some just are happy living in Indianapolis and hanging out with their family, and it's all good. But the other thing to be, to have this kind of career, I would chalk it up. Yes, I've developed a sound, and I'm super lucky to have that particular sound resonate with a mess of people. That's awesome. But I think Joni Mitchell said it best. She said, success is 5% talent and 95% crazy.
Do you
insert in drive in there for that?
Sure. Do you consider any one thing to be your big break of something that said, oh, okay, this was really a turning point for me?
I guess when I met and started working with Sting, I think I'd been released 3 albums by the time I met Sting, and he took me out to have a drink at a very famous hotel in London called the Dorchester. It's kind of where all the, the royal families and all everyone stay or whatever. And so he took me to this bar and sat me down and said, listen, I want you to do something. Think about it for a second. He goes, I've had success breaking musicians, but I really believe in you, and I will personally guarantee you that I'll break the sound of your trumpet to the whole world if you join my band. And it was a 2.5-year tour. So he says, you're going to have to leave your own being a band leader, but you'll be able to watch how I do it, and I guarantee you that a lot of those fans that will hear you aren't necessarily going to be jazz fans, but they will be Sting fans, and then they will become Chris Botti fans. So that was the beginning, you know. And the next tour, after that 2.5 year tour, he fired me from his band and promoted me to his opening act. He said, now is really the time for you to step into the spotlight and go for it, you know. So that's when I brought my band, you know, so we're going out in front of 10,000 people a night, a lot of them who still didn't know me, and someone in the audience was like, man, my friend Oprah would love this guy, and 2 weeks later we're on Oprah, and you know, this happens all the time over the last 20 years with Sting, so we are such good friends, and we remain such family, like, you know, that it's just, he's done so much for me, directly and indirectly, sang on all my records, and my TV shows, and all that stuff, and so that was really the turning point into the avenue of kind of, you know, being recognized, or, you know, not just by musicians, in other words.
You mentioned the word drive. You were talking about that a moment ago, but does that come, is that synonymous with work ethic? I mean, that you, even like Sting, or someone who is very, has yes, a drive, but it has a work ethic that's going to keep them moving in a very positive direction.
Yeah, well, sure. Work ethic is that, you know, but you know, but then there's a little bit of the Joni Mitchell, verbiage crazy. You know,
right.
Like, I'm the kind of guy that will fly to Seoul, Korea, and play a jazz festival there, and then the next night play in Jacksonville, Florida. You know, and a lot of musicians just won't do that, but I will. You know, and we I take the whole band. They're like, Chris, we don't stop. You know, we do 28 nights in New York, one day travel day, a week in San Francisco, a week in Seattle, off to Asia. We don't stop. And most people would stop. So there's a whole lot of like drive and determination, and then there's a little bit of crazy in there too.
So what do you get out of the gig in the sense of, I mean, besides the money component to it, which you could just pick that up with another gig somewhere else in the States, of why you would have to go halfway across the world? What is it? It seems that there's something that you want to achieve in just doing that act.
I mean, we went to Korea last year. Just using Korea as an example, we were in Taiwan and Japan and
yes,
China just a few weeks ago. But I mean, but last year, Lauryn Hill and I did a festival together in Seoul, and so we flew out there and flew back the next day, same thing. First of all, it's always really gratifying to me, and I guess I'm proud that that people halfway across the world know who the heck you are. I mean, it blows my mind, you know, like, okay, well, sure, I can see somewhere in North America or Canada or whatever place, but you know, to go all that way and have like big massive amounts of people, many many thousands there, it's great. So I guess pride is probably the thing that drives me the most, to have this incredible band, to have this incredible opportunity to go on the road with them. I don't, you know, I don't have a family. I don't really own any possessions. I don't, you know, I live in a hotel. And so I feel very fortunate, and I'm very, very proud of being able to do what I do.
What about recording? What's next for you in that regard?
I'm going to do a new record in the fall, and then it'll be out next year. I mean, the record business is changing so rapidly that who knows, you know. But the real thing now, the music business, for a large portion of it, is like politics. It's come down to like an exit poll, what they call in politics. And literally after we play our show, Kingston, for instance, and that audience leaves, whatever they tweet, trust me that the promoter is looking at that stuff. And so it's just a matter of, you know, whether it's a year or two or 3 years later, how often does it take for you to come back? And if you get asked back, that's a success. You know, that is the new record business. That's the new currency of the music business, is the exit poll, what do the fans say, and how often do you get asked back? I mean, there are many, many places in this country and the world that we go back every year. I mean, almost to the day, you know. And so, and that's super gratifying. But that is the new business.
There seemed to be, in my years of interviewing entertainers, it seems to be that there are people that will look at a tour list and say, "Oh God," and then there are the people going, "Oh man, look at that." That's a different mindset. Both can be successful, but it is different.
You can have some of your best shows ever at a place that you can't even. I mean, we played in Taiwan a few weeks ago, like a city I'd never even heard of, Taichung. I know in Taiwan is probably a movie, and there were 4,000 people there going crazy. You're like, wow, okay. You know, or you could play, I could play Milwaukee on an off night, and, you know, it's not New York, it's not whatever, and it's great. I mean, you know, I have no. And sometimes you get geared up to play Los Angeles, and it's not so great. So, just like you just never know, and that's what makes the music part of it, the risky part of it, so fun. That you roll in with all intentions to, like, you know, really go to war and make music for everyone and be honest about the stuff. Not just, you know, we're not a band with a bunch of computers and stage hands and, you know, people backstage making music. It's very, very. It's a very unusual mix of musicians that are, you know, incredibly talented. I challenge anyone to pick a better band, you know, or come see a better band. So, you know, that's just my braggadocious. But anyhow, that's the deal.
Well, you can check out that band and check out Chris Bode at UPAC tomorrow night at 8:00. You can find out more by going to bardavon.org. bardavon.org. Also, Chris Bode and the band will be at the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall on Thursday, the 2nd of May. May 2nd
that's
at the Troy
Savings. We've been back there many times, so that's a good thing.
Yes, a good venue and beautiful, obviously a great performing arts venue, beautiful for music. It's troymusichall.org. Again, you can see Chris Bode at UPAC tomorrow night, bardavon.org. Chris Bode, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks so much for having me, and we hope to see everyone in Kingston and land of the greatest bass player in the world, Tony Levin, Peter Gabriel's bass player.
Oh, he's great.
So
our good friend.
He's awesome.
Excellent.
Yeah, give him my best.
Will
all
do.
Right. All the best to you.
Thanks,
take
Chris.
Care.
Take care.
Bye bye.
Again, Chris Bode will be at UPAC in Kingston tomorrow night. You can find out more information by going to bardavon.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.